With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 189 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, Europe's biggest sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. As Sean Dyche keeps on saying, we had the ideal chance to change the story. But unfortunately, it was the same old story at Goodison Park yesterday. And I'm sitting here on a horrible Sunday morning and can't quite believe we've come away from Goodison Park with nothing after Luton beat us by 2-1. Unthinkable after, you know, the Brentford game last weekend, the Villa game in midweek. Two fantastic away performances. Confidence must have been sky high. And then we rock up to Goodison Park and after probably the best 50 minutes I've seen at Goodison for quite a while. And the players look all happy, smiling. Some lovely football, some great movements. It all just fell apart and it was the same old story. And Pete, you know, we were sitting there in the rain. The rain sort of, that was literally our mood, wasn't it? It just summed it all up, the weather yesterday, in terms of what happened at Goodison. And as I say, I can't believe that we've come away with no points and we've actually lost the game too. And I'm not going to spend the whole podcast slating Luton because Luton have come to Goodison Park and done what they had to do and they played to their strengths. But we've lost to a limited side who literally, for me, it seemed like their only chance of winning the game was by getting set pieces and Everton allowed them to do so.
Well, that's the perfect way of summing it up for me, Mike. Like you say, no disrespect at all to Luton, but for the first 15-20 minutes, we're absolutely on top. And we were playing some really, really good football. You know, there were moments of that first kind of 15 minutes or so that it were just a real joy to watch. You know, I thought we looked like a football side again. We looked like we were enjoying football. You know, there were two moments in particular. I think that obviously the McNeil chance from outside the box where it's kind of come into him and the defender at pace, the ball's popped up and he's sort of flicked at it from about 20 yards and it's just gone past the post. And then another where we switch it from right to left and there's a lovely triangle between kind of McNeil, Decore, Onana that's finished with a back heel from Mikalenko. Equally, James Garner had one where, you know, he kind of croifs it on the right-hand side, cuts in on his left and again bends it past the post on his left foot. We were playing some really nice stuff. But I think after we had three or four of those chances, I think Luton in the first half, I think they had six corners in total. I'm sure three or four of them came in the first half in probably the first 25 minutes. And it started to dawn on you, like, this is their game plan. Like, this is it. You know, they're not getting on the ball. The game plan was to run direct at our fullbacks, win a corner, try and get the first goal, try and get something, and it paid off for them. But the big frustration is we handed it to them, and you know, with mistakes, with basic mistakes that we never should be making. I mean, you could make an argument that the first goal, it was unfortunate, but I think we probably could have been a bit more organised and a bit quicker just to get that ball away. But it's the second goal that's the killer. It's the second goal that's cost us the game, because I think, you know, easy to say with hindsight, but I think one goal down, we would have won that game. I think we would have got back into it. And I think from the position of a draw, I think we would have gone on to win. But I think the pressure of having to come back and draw or win from two goals was just too much for us, because we looked like a different side after that. We stopped playing football. And I know the game becomes different when you're defending a two-goal lead. But we went from looking like a comfortable side with an attacking philosophy to desperation and complete disorganisation. But I think that the second goal deserves picking apart a bit, because I had a brilliant view of it from where I was sat. And the three people I sit with before the ball came in, we all called it. You know, the centre forward was stood on Mykolenko free, and Mykolenko was marking a man. How that's been allowed to happen, I don't know. You know, what's gone on there? Where is the leadership, number one? And secondly, why isn't Mykolenko shouting? Why isn't Mykolenko, you know, putting his hand up and screaming, "I've got two"? Because as soon as that ball comes over the top, he's not got a chance. It was Sunday league football. And that's what makes you feel like tearing your hair out. That's the really frustrating thing about performances like that, because we've had two great wins, start the game on the front foot, we're playing lovely football. If we got the first goal, it would have been a completely different game. But it's those, you know, small two or three moments where we go from looking like a different side, you know, on the up and the kind of the resurgence of Everton, to this broken club we've been over the past couple of seasons, where just these mistakes and sloppiness sink back in, and then we can't get out of it again. So it was a really, really frustrating watch, and it just puts us in a position of being under immense pressure again. And I think really affecting the team, you know, psychologically, because I don't think there's not too much point dwelling on it, but I think the collective frustration of Evertonians with this result will be that it represented a massive, massive opportunity for a huge release of pressure to really hamper Luton, to really hamper a relegation rival, and give us, you know, a lot of protection and positivity going into the Bournemouth game, the international break, and the derby. So we've just got to bounce back and move forward, but it's a bitter result, I think.
I think that last point, Pete, is a really good one, affecting the team psychologically. Do you know what I mean? I just think, dare I say it, like, those first 15 minutes represent kind of what we want Goodison Park, or what Dyche wants Goodison Park to be. Players to play with no fear, like zero fear, because obviously we've, like you said, we've had two fantastic wins in the week. You know, take nothing away from that Villa result. Look at the Villa result against Brighton. Villa only rested a few players. And then second half, obviously they brought on, you know, their main men as well, and we still saw them off pretty easily. We've beaten a Brentford team that have only lost one in 18 at home. What a perfect opportunity, like you said there, to sort of bounce into the Luton game, play without that fear, and then go on a bit of a run before the international break in the derby. Like you said, you know, you could end up going into derby then arguably on, you know, four wins on the bounce. No one's talking about relegation. You know, you'd probably be sitting around mid-table or so or something like that. Suddenly, you know, Goodison's a happy place again. That's how fine the margins are, isn't it? Because, like you said, we didn't score early doors, despite starting the game really well and playing free-flowing football. And then their formation was causing us a few issues. When they finally did get on the ball a little bit, you know, the five at the back and, you know, the wing backs getting, they targeted obviously Ashley Young down the right hand side. That lad got in a few times, and they were, like you said, they were just, it was clear as day, they were just playing for set pieces. And you were right in terms of the corners, Pete. They had five corners in the first half, and they had four in the space of 5 minutes down that same side, didn't they, every time? And we had three warnings in a row. The lad that ends up scoring the first goal from Lockyer, wherever his name is, he wins the first header, heads it over the bar in exactly the same spot. Then their centre-forward, Morris, wins another header. Again, should have probably scored or got it on target. Then they have another one identical in the same spot. I'm thinking, how are we not making first contact? You know what I mean? Mike, you said it on the podcast last week. We're a big side. I think we are the biggest side in the Premier League. I mean, why are we not making first contact? They're playing the corner. How many warnings do you need? They're playing the corner in exactly the same spot every time. And you know, Luton will go down for me, by the way. You know, okay, yeah, we've given points to a relegation rival, but there's no way on this planet Luton will stay up in the Premier League this season. They're very, very limited. They've got two set-piece goals. We will go into the second one, definitely, Pete. I agree with you, but yeah, what a real opportunity. You know, you can see why Dyche was fuming at the end there, saying, you know, he keeps on saying, like you said, Mike, the chance to change the story. I think what he's basically trying to say is just take the pressure off the players. You know what I mean? Because the quality there is there now. We've seen it. We've seen it in two away games. The quality is there within that team. The quality is there. You know, you could arguably blame the Fulham and the Wolves game on the fact we didn't have a proper centre forward. We had a proper centre forward there yesterday, and we had another one off the bench, and we still managed to find a way to lose the game. That's the biggest frustration. It's a real opportunity to sort of, you know, put four wins together, and sort of just to lay any fears amongst the fan base. And instead now, all like you said before, Mike, at the intro, all that pressure is now back on the players, and you can see when you play without fear, like they did in that first 15 minutes, they can get it down and play. And then the opposite of that we saw in the second half, where there's no real sort of, well, there's nothing in it. What patterns of play are we putting together? It was just long balls. There was just nothing, was there? And I think that just shows you in the first 15 minutes and then the next 75 minutes were just chalk and cheese, weren't they?
And I think on excuse me, on those set pieces again, every single time that Luton got a corner or got a free kick in and around the box, there was fear amongst the fan base a little bit as well, of course, but obviously the players are going to be aware that, hang on, we've struggled to deal with these from the start of the game, since he got the first corner. We're not setting up in a particularly great way. I mean, the free kick for the second goal, by the way, that comes about from a really poor pass from Jordan Pickford, puts us under pressure. There was, you know, I was looking whether we actually should have had a foul ourselves, but it went the other way. But I just can't for the life of me understand why in that situation, when you've got more players there defending than there is attacking, how when you've got an overload of defenders, how every single player is not marked. I can't for the life of me understand it. It's got to be a situation where it's man-to-man marking and you've got a couple of spare defenders. And like you say, there's got to be at least two, three, four players there shouting and saying, let's move across, let's shuffle over. Put Mikhailenko further back onto the centre forward who scored the goal, and let's all move. And not one player identified that there's someone ghosting into the back post. Good finish, by the way. But when you've got that much time, you know, the pressure's off you, you know, and you can just take your time, compose yourself and finish. And it's appalling for me. You know, after what we've seen in the last week, two really, really fantastic performances to lift the spirits of ourselves as fans. Obviously, the players must have been absolutely full of confidence coming into yesterday. And we see the opening 15 minutes, but then it just takes, doesn't it, a knock in the game. And the confidence goes straight away and almost the game plan goes. Because I said to the fella next to me after the first goal, okay, we've gone 1-0 down, but keep on playing your football. Because it was tearing them apart at times. We were getting in, creating chances. Just keep on playing your football and the goal will come, you know, but don't panic. But you can just feel it. You just feel at times the panic just sets in. And when it went to two, I was still thinking, we still get something from this game. You know, once we get a goal, we're back in the game. and Luton then for me will potentially fold, but getting that goal, obviously Calvert-Lewin, now, you know, he's in good form, 3 goals in 3 games for him, which is great to see. At that point again, Everton got momentum. There was 6 minutes stoppage time at the end of the first half. Half time probably came at the wrong time for us because it killed our momentum. But you go in at half time now, back in the game, and thinking, okay, let's start on the front foot again, second half, like we ended the first. But even then, you come out of the, I thought, second half, and it was lethargic. It was lacking ideas. They didn't go back to what they were doing at the start of the first half. And it was almost as if when you face a bit of adversity, Everton at times, especially at home, which we're going to come on to in a minute, they just struggle to deal with it. They struggle to deal with the pressure. You know what? I thought the fans yesterday were terrific. There was times a few moans and groans, understandably, but the fans are with them, pushing them, willing them, you know, up the pitch and willing that intensity. And I just wonder what goes through the players' heads, really, in terms of why they fear it so much and why there's this fear, you know, with that they can't play the football at Goodison Park. But I just want to ask you both, do you think that the manager, in terms of his setup, now bear in mind, 2 away performances, we changed formation, we went to a back five against Aston Villa, did really well. We played our usual sort of 4-5-1 against Brentford. Now, away from home, Everton seems to be able to set up really, really well. They look organised. Everyone seems to know their job. They're a threat on the counter and in an attacking sense. And we seem to look that bit better defensively, more organised. We had our 4-5-1 formation again against Luton at home. Do you think Pete the manager got that wrong? Do you think that really we should be looking at doing something different there? You know, the back five, and people might say, you know, don't need 5 defenders, but Nathan Patterson was taken out of the side. I really, really unlucky for me. I thought he was terrific against Aston Villa. Do you think the manager should have really been a bit more on the front foot in terms of how we set ourselves up, especially at home against Luton?
No. Because, you know, you look at the game, we've had almost 70% possession and over 20 shots. So the problem for me was exactly what we've just discussed. A couple of moments in the first half where we're disorganised, we don't do some of the basics well, and we pay the price and we get ourselves into a position that then completely changes the psychology of the match and we can't get ourselves out of it. And I guess two additional points I'd probably bring in to buffer that is, you know, number one, you look at kind of our XG in the home games this season that arguably we should have won, or certainly we should have got points in, we should have done a lot better. I think the consensus is that we've been underperforming to an extent in front of goal. I know this feels like a long, long time ago for us now, but I still think it's an important point. You've got to look at what happened, you know, during the lockdowns and COVID in terms of our home form. You know, how well we performed. And I don't think that's a coincidence. Yeah, lots of Blues have referred to the Ben Foster interview where he speaks about his time at, I think it's Watford, and their kind of approach to coming to play at Everton. You know, try and infuriate the crowd, try and make Goodison Park a difficult place for Everton to be. And then that will allow you to get into the game. And I honestly think that, you know, that there's really something in that. That when we experience some adversity at home, I think it's more difficult for us to come back from those positions because of, I think, the expectations of Evertonians. Because I think, you know, we're football people, we're aware of the size and the scope of Everton. And I do think we live by our motto. You know, our motto is our standard. And I'd include myself in this. I think we're all very quick sometimes to get frustrated with what we see on the pitch at home, and look, you know, rightly so. But I think that very quickly that filters through to the players. So for me, it's just a case of, you know, we've been a bit unfortunate. We've been underperforming slightly. We've been trying to get Calvert-Lewin back in. We've been trying to integrate Beto, and in the home games, we've not got the first goal. And that's the difference for me. Whereas I think, you know, against Brentford and Villa, it's been different, and that momentum and being away from Goodison Park, I think, has helped us. I think it's benefited us. But I know this wasn't the tack you were going down. I know it was just an open question, but we were driving back from the game yesterday, and as usual, I don't know where they find them from. You know, listening to a couple of idiots on the radio profess to be Evertonians calling for Sean Dyche's head and saying things like they don't know what they're watching. And, you know, look, there have been times with some of the performances where we've questioned what the philosophy is and the vision that maybe Dyche is trying to deliver. But it was clear yesterday. It was really, really clear. We played some great football. I think we played some very good football against Aston Villa and Brentford. So there's the embers of something. There's the beginning of something. We've got some very, very good players there. You know, James Garner is growing and growing slowly but surely. And yet we're having to kind of factor him in out of position. Jack Harrison is a really competent football player. And I think and I hope there'll be bright things to come from him. Calvert-Lewin, as you say, you know, 3-3 now. We know what we can get out of Dwight McNeil, and he's still a very young player. And Nana the same. He's had a couple of wobbly performances early on, but he seems to be really growing at the moment. So there's lots to be positive about. I think it's just, can we make it click quick enough? And I think, can we get one or two wins that will just take that pressure off Sean Dyche and, you know, hopefully give him a fair crack at the Everton job, really. So, I mean, that'd be how I see it. I don't know what you think, Lee.
Yeah, I think you've made some good points. I was about to disagree with you at the start there, but then you articulated your point really well, Pete. So I'm having to rethink what I was going to say. I do agree with what you said, actually. XG, by the way, yeah, Dyche talks about it a lot, and there's an element of to it, and there's some, you can give some kudos to it. But to be honest, our XG at halftime was 3. Theirs was less than 1. So, you know, arguably we should be winning the game. But, you know, XG doesn't win your football matches. Goals do. So, you know, that tells you about that point. I mean, by contrast, you look at Villa. Villa put 6 past Brighton. Their XG was less than 2. I mean, which is absolutely bonkers when you consider ours by halftime was 3. So we're not being clinical at all. Personally, yesterday, I mean, there's an argument to say, like, you basically played the same team that beat Brentford, you know, where he's put Garner on the right, he's put McNeil on the left, he's dropped Dan Juma, and he's basically asked Garner and McNeil to sort of, you know, try and come in central as and when you can, pick and choose your moments to come in centrally and impact the game. Personally, I would have put, certainly at home against Luton, I would have put James Garner in the middle. I'd have had Onana in the 6, which he's been doing recently. I thought Onana was exceptional in the week against Villa. I'd have dropped Idrissa Gueye and put Garner in the middle, James Garner. And I'd have played Harrison on the right. Now, I understand he's just come back from injury. I understand, you know, there's a question mark over overloading him potentially. But I think he showed enough in 60 minutes against Villa to show us what he's all about, you know, and he can play on the right-hand side. And personally, I would have probably gone with that and then given him 60 minutes and you know, essentially just being a bit more front-footed. I would have started James Patterson as well. Nathan Patterson, sorry. I would have started him ahead of Ashley Young, definitely, because he just gives you that energy. You know, he likes to get forward. And I, like you said, Michael, thought he was exceptional in the week and deserved to keep his place for me instead of Ashley Young on the right hand side. But they're only small changes. You know, ultimately we did enough to be winning that game, and it's two absolute, essentially, lapses in concentration, whatever you want to call it, poor organisation, not being aggressive to win that first header in your own box. That's cost us the game ultimately. So it was massively frustrating. I mean, we matched Villa up, didn't we, in the week? We went obviously with the wing back option in the week. And you know what? Fair play to Dyche. He gets hammered sometimes for being a bit one dimensional, but he changed it. We all questioned it before the game. Why is Michael Keane come in? Why are we going with 3 at the back? And it worked, didn't it? Allowed us to, you know, our press against Villa was arguably one of the most impressive things in the game. You know, they struggled to get out when they're trying to play out from the back. And then you know, obviously the Luton yesterday went with a wing back formation, and that was, that did cause us a few issues, particularly down our right there, left hand side. But ultimately, that team, like I said before, was the same team that, that put Brentford away, who are a much better team than Luton. Let's have that right. They're a much better team. They've proven that in the Premier League. And that, that there was enough quality on that pitch yesterday to comfortably win that football match. And I think that's why Dyche was so frustrated at the end of the game, because he knew himself it was a real opportunity. And, you know, the players have somehow found a way to throw the game away. You know, and I do agree with what Pete said there. I think if you score first, if we'd have scored in those first 15 minutes, the, you know, the pressure would have been released even more. And, I, you know, we probably would have probably gone on to win a comfortably 2 or 3. Do I think he should have changed it a bit more in the game? I mean, he made quite a few subs in the end, but I thought he should have brought Dan Juma on earlier. I thought McNeil probably had one of his worst games for Everton yesterday. You know, I know he's just come back and he has been pretty good since he's come back, but he wasn't great yesterday. You know, people have been crying out for Beto to come on alongside Calvert-Lewin. When he did that, you know, did we really get anything? Did we get enough crosses into the box to cause a threat? Probably not. We had a few half chances. Beto probably should have scored the one he put over the bar. The other one was offside, but he probably should have scored. He tried to guide that when he should have probably put his net muscles through it like he did against Doncaster and headed it down. He probably would have scored. But yeah, I just think it's just, you know, you can hear the frustration in all our voices here, because we know that was a real opportunity and we've basically blown it. And we're...
But the hopeful was a massive, massive issue now, isn't it? You know, for, you know, it used to be Fortress Goodison back in the day, and now everyone's got the keys to the fortress. So it's almost as if Everton now are set up to play better away from home. And there's this block at home, and you know the games. You look at it. We play for a home this season. That was our first home goal, which is really poor in itself, given the sides that we've played. And you know, XG stands for very little, doesn't it? As we know, I mean, it gives you an idea about the chances that are being created. But we've gone from saying the Fulham and the Wolves game, we had a striker who would have won those games, to yesterday having a high XG, having two strikers on the pitch, as well as obviously Harrison, Danjuma, McNeil, James Garner, all those kind of players on the pitch at some point, and still not scoring more than one goal. And it's a real strange thing, because we look back historically, and you know, Goodison Park, former players will always say it, a horrible place to come and play football. The fans are on top of you. You know, you can hear every word that's being said from the crowd. And we've gone from that to being a really intimidating place to come and play, to we'll roll over and have our bellies tickled almost by everybody, because once you face some kind of adversity, the players, for whatever reason, can't then perform. And it's a strange thing, but it's a concern, because to survive in the Premier League, your bread and butter are your home games. And given 3 out of the 4 teams we've faced so far this season at home, you're expecting to take points off, make no mistake about it, and we've taken nothing at all. You think, well, we can't then be relying on picking up points against these sides at home, because there seems to be some kind of issue with our players doing so. But what is the problem, Peter? What do you think the underlying issue is with these players? Because we've seen how well they can play. We've seen two fantastic performances in the last week or so by the same players away from home. So we know what they're capable of. They know what they're capable of as well. Sean Dyche, as I said at the start of the show, keeps on saying, you know, it's a chance to change the story, and the story's not being changed at all. It's got the same ending. And, you know, there must be something that we can put our finger on to say, well, the reason why we're not performing at home and not picking up points is because of this.
I think it's as I said a moment ago, I do think it's a psychological issue. And I do think it's something of a story that when something goes against us at home, I think the players' heads go down, and I think we start to play differently, and I think that lifts the opposition. I think, like you say, Goodison's become, sadly, a fairly comfortable place for away teams to be, because I think the game plan is the same for every team: frustrate the crowd, quieten the crowd, stay in the game, wait for Everton to make a mistake and then pounce. And once you've got that first goal, you know, it's very, very difficult for us to come back. And, you know, look, I think the only way you change that is through momentum. And I think, again, that's kind of the theme of the podcast today, isn't it? I think that's why we're all so frustrated, because we're aware of what a huge opportunity it was to really start to build that momentum. And it feels like, not that it puts the achievements and the performances of Brentford and Aston Villa in the bin, but it undermines them to an extent, and you wonder what's been lost between those games and the Luton game, because we made very, very simple errors. And I think that's the worry, isn't it? There seems to be something about playing at home where we often don't do the basics, or we make some very, very bad mistakes. And I wonder if that's down to nerves, discomfort, you know, pressure. I think we've got a very young group. And I think what we have to bear in mind, I'm trying to think how to put this, because I don't want it to seem like I'm critical of the players, but I don't think really we've got any Evertonians on that pitch. And I think that's massive, you know. I think that's huge. I think we really miss what Coleman brings, because I would count him as an Evertonian due to his service and his relationship with the club. But I think you look at our teams over the years, generally we've either had, you know, an established kind of blue blood Evertonian in that team, or we've had a childhood Evertonian in that team. And some people might think that I'm crackers, but I think there's something about that that's really, really important in terms of, you know, changing the dynamic psychologically of the team on the pitch, you know, and understanding what it means. I think at times those players can carry the team, or, you know, can get a game by the scruff of the neck, or can organise others. So for me, it's probably an interplay of the pattern that started to play out with our home form. But I do think we're missing certain types of personnel in that team. I think we've got some very, very good players and some good young players, but I think we're missing a bit of leadership, a bit of a calm head, but also a bit of a blue head. I think we're missing somebody that, you know, is really, really connected to the club, that can kind of link that onto the pitch. I don't know if you lads think that I'm mad as well, but there's just something about that for me, I think we've lost a bit as the squad's changed over the last 18 months.
I think there's a great point on Seamus Coleman there, Pete, because Seamus has been there, seen it, done it. He's seen every type of atmosphere at Goodison there is to see, hasn't he? You know, there was times under David Moyes when we were arguably playing our best football, where teams like Luton would just be bounced. You know what I mean? Goodison. We'd all be going to Goodison, you know, almost guaranteeing 3 points at times under Moyes against these types of teams. The biggest criticism against Moyes was that, you know, the whole knife to a gunfight argument, wasn't it? That he always struggled against the sort of the so-called bigger teams when they came to Goodison and even away from home. But against these sort of sides, they were bread and butter for us. You know, we'd have won that game, you know, probably 2-3, if not more. But yeah, I think it's not a bad point to make. Because, you know, right now, let's be honest, it's a fit Seamus Coleman comes into the team, doesn't he? You know, he comes straight back into that side. If anything, for his leadership skills alone, and is, you know, sometimes you need that, you know, you need that type of player. You when adversity happens like it did yesterday, you need someone like a Coleman to turn around, you know, on the pitch and almost kind of say, look, lads, right, you know, cut it out. Keep you know, calm heads here. Let's build ourselves back into the game, or even a war cry type scenario, whatever you want to call it. But I just think, you know, it's become a big problem, because once anxiety kicks in around the ground and that then moves across to the players, you know, they're suddenly playing with fear again. And it's that point I made at the start before. Those first 15 minutes, they played with no fear whatsoever. And then you can see the ability coming through then. When you then take that away, it's like when you play with that fear, as we showed in the second half, their keeper didn't have a save to make in the second half. We had no shots on target in the second half. You know what I mean? And one of my criticisms a little bit of Dyche is you know, what were, second half especially, what were we trying to do there? Because, you know, I watched Spurs Liverpool yesterday, and there was obviously some shocking decisions in that. But when Spurs were trying to get that goal against 10 men initially and then 9, you look what they do when they get out wide. Very, very, very reminiscent of Arsenal, very reminiscent of City in a way. When they get out wide, they're constantly trying to look for an overload. They're constantly looking for an angle for an overload from the fullbacks and the wingers just to get in behind to try and pull it back, which ultimately led to them getting the winning goal. It was an own goal in the end, but they got in behind. And that's the thing, they're constantly looking to create that scenario. And if you look at it, when they do get out wide, if the fullback isn't on or is getting tracked, there's always a guy inside waiting on the edge of the box. You know, so if they don't go out wide, they recycle it back inside, then that person either gets a shot off or they start again. They're constantly looking to create angles and to create. And I didn't see any of that from us yesterday. I didn't constantly, you know, see us, you know, pen them into their own half and recycle the ball around, looking for an angle, looking to get in behind. You know, we barely got in behind, you know, to the byline at all yesterday. And that's for me, if that's a training thing, that's a patterns of play. You know, we're a better team than Luton here. We're going to dominate most of the ball. Okay, how do we create chances? Well, a lot of the time we were hitting long diagonal balls into the box. You know, it's almost impossible to score from that. You know, Garner was floating a few across, McNeil put a few across. You know what I mean? I mean, I can't. Can you think of any time where our fullbacks or wingers got in behind to pull it back or in that and create a real opportunity? I can't think of hardly any. Yeah, but if you look at those other teams, they're constantly working that. There's a clear pattern. They're being coached. You know, okay, we're getting into these positions. How do we break this low block down? Okay, we've got to try and get our fullbacks or our wingers in behind. And we just didn't do that. And in the end, it just resorted to like almost nothing in the second half because we didn't really create anything of note.
There was almost a reluctance at times, I thought, in terms of our fullbacks actually looking to overlap. When it went wide, quite often you look at Dwight McNeil, James Garner, Jack Haggerson, they got hold of the ball. And the fullback either is really slow and going past them or just stays behind them. And then what happens then is two or three Luton players are on one Everton player and he's got to then go back because there's nothing in front of him. We've got to try and force something. And it was just breaking down. And there's got to be a responsibility. You know, there's a lot of senior players in that squad. Ashley Young, again, you know, I thought yesterday really struggled after... I thought he was really solid against Brentford, probably his best game. I think he really struggled yesterday. And, you know, when we look ahead to the Bournemouth game, it wouldn't surprise me if he's out of the starting 11. But the fullbacks have got to sort of look to get beyond, as you say, to get behind the defence and then put those balls across. Because there's a reliance too much on the wingers doing it all on their own. So beating two or three men to get a ball in at times. You know, there was a couple of decent balls put in by Harrison second half. Players then weren't, you know, anticipating or taking a gamble in terms of our two strikers. And it was just, all in all, it was just I think after that first 15 minutes, it was a really poor performance. And it's unforgivable for me against that kind of side who we are going to be, you know, scrapping with. Let's make no mistake about it. And you're throwing a game away through basically... I think a lack of composure is what it is for me. You know, you've shown how good you can be a few days ago and a few days prior to that. But then as soon as you come to Goodison Park and you face adversity, your composure goes and there's something on the line there. Why is that happening? You know, it's not as if it's really hostile towards our own players. And it's not. There was none of that for me. There's none of much of getting on players' cases. A little bit of frustration, like I said earlier, but It's inexcusable. You've got to have an idea. Yes, that comes from the manager as well. But also players have got to take responsibility. You know, like we go back to the second goal, who took responsibility? Who was the leader there? You know, open your eyes and open your mouth and tell people to move and mark a man on the back post, you know, who's on his own. That's schoolboy stuff for me. And if no one's going to do that, that's a concern. And we can't pin our hopes on Seamus Coleman coming back in to that side to be the leader that we need. Because he understands the club and understands Goodison Park. For me, I agree, he's a big influence. But those other players, most of them have played football long enough to understand what it takes to win a game of football at home. And it should be easier than winning a game of football away from home. Dead simple. But there's too many people who shrink, I think.
I think that's a good point, but there's clearly an issue, right? Since Dyche has come in January, we've scored 8 goals at home, lad. 8 goals at home since January. Yeah, the last 2 games away from home against, as I said, 2 decent sides, we scored 5. In a week. In a week, we've nearly, you know, we've more, you know, nearly scored as many as we have at home. You know what I mean? Since January, there's clearly a problem. The point I was trying to get at before was, in football, there's different ways of scoring goals. You know, if your team can find multiple different ways of scoring goals, you're going to be a decent side, aren't you? You know what I mean? You know, rather than be one-dimensional. You know, there's set pieces, like I said before, there's getting in behind with your fullbacks. A lot of goals in the Premier League now, particularly the top sides, a lot of them are scoring those, what I call five-a-side goals almost, getting to the byline, pulling it back, slotting it in. You know what I mean? Trying to create overloads, trying to create 2v1s all over the pitch. You know, a lot of goals in the Premier League are scored like that, especially the top sides against, you know, weaker sides like Luton who sit in. You know what I mean? You know, gone are the days years ago where, you know, a lot of goals, would, particularly at Goodison as well, would be headers. You know, you barely see headed goals anymore in the Premier League. You know what I mean? So, for me, there's got to be different ways of scoring goals. We said it last week, there's enough goals in this team now. Now, before you can make an argument, we had the likes of Mopay up front. It was far from prolific. He was hampering us instead of, you know, making us a better side. But there's enough goals in that team now. You know, we said it last week. You know, Calvert-Lewin's got 3 and 3. McNeil's got goals in him. Dan Juma's got goals in him. Okay, didn't start yesterday. You know, Harrison will have, you know, a goal or two in him as well. You know, Decore, as we know, his record is nearly, you know, what's a goal every 2 games, roughly, you know, since he's come back into the side. So there is goals in there, but there's clearly a problem. There's clearly a problem because we've scored 8 goals at home since January. That's shocking. That's shocking. You know, you can't expect to win football matches if you scored 8 goals at home in nearly a calendar year, what, like 10 months? You know what I mean? It's absolutely shocking. We've got to find different ways. And that's the bit where I'll criticise Dyche a little bit, is what are we doing in training there? When we play against these types of teams who aren't going to come on to us, they're just going to happy to sit in their shell, and then we've got to try and find a way to create a chance and score a goal. What are we doing? You know, what are we doing? We're going to have a lot of the ball rather than just lump it in from, you know, deep crosses. You know, Harrison, like you said, put a few crosses in. Look where he was putting the crosses in, though, boys. He wasn't doing it from the byline. You know what I mean? He wasn't doing it from the better angle. He was doing it from halfway inside our half. Sorry, in their half, wasn't he? They were deep crosses. You know, it has to be an absolute pinpoint cross to pick someone out from there. And defenders all day from that angle can head it out. And let's be honest, Luton are used to that. They're used to basically, you know, sticking a head on it. You know what I mean? That's the type of team they are. You know, they're a Championship side. Let's have it right. And, you know, the better teams will have carved them apart. You know what I mean? They would have found angles. They would have got their fullbacks in behind, and they would have scored a lot of those types of goals. You know, if you're just lumping balls into the box, Luton will defend that all day. They'll be happy with that, and as they showed, they did. You know, they lost 2 of their centre halves, by the way. You know what I mean? They had their 2 second choice centre halves on the pitch. You were just happy to put their nuts on it every time. So, you know, for me, that's where I will throw a bit of criticism there. You know, what are we doing rather than, you know, in terms of trying to create different styles of opportunities rather than just effectively, you know, we've got 2 big fellas in there now. Let's just try and put crosses in from deep.
Yeah, but you can do all the work you want on the training ground in terms of on the pitch. But if it's something mentally, there's work that's got to be done there. You know, we don't know. We're guessing, of course. You know, the professional football players, you know how to play football. I mean, we know how to score goals, as you said. You know, we score goals away from home. But at home, to score 8 goals in the calendar year is unbelievable. How we survived on that, by the way, from when Sean Dyche came in, is incredible. You know, there was a lot of, obviously, 1-0s, Arsenal, Brentford, Leeds, of course, Bournemouth. A lot of those 1-0s got getting us over the line. So it shows you, that, like Pete was saying earlier on, if we don't score the first goal, at home especially, it's almost as if the players think, oh yeah, we're winning this game. And we know, but as fans, we sit there and think, we're winning this game. When we go behind, and that's a problem, isn't it? You know, that's a massive problem. If that's what's seeping into the players' minds, then that's got to be rectified in some way, shape, or form. But obviously, it's got to be rectified over the course of this week, because we've got another side in town who are, you know, not doing as well as maybe they should be. I think Bournemouth were lauded over the summer. A new manager came in. I think they signed pretty well. They got absolutely battered by Arsenal at home 4-0 yesterday. And they're in a bit of trouble with ourselves at this early part of the season as well. And we're going to discuss that after this show, Bree.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome back to the second part of today's Unholy Trinity podcast as we look ahead to the visit of Bournemouth at Goodison Park next weekend. And Bournemouth, like I said, you know, not in the best of form. Any side can be beaten by Arsenal, of course. You know, we know how good Arsenal are. We saw them at Goodison Park ourselves a couple of weeks ago. Bournemouth shipped 4 goals at home against them yesterday and found themselves in the bottom three on 3 points. A point worse off than ourselves and a goal difference of minus 10. So in a little bit of bother there, of course. But we were all hoping that we could go into that game on the back of 3 wins on the spin, have some real positivity, have some real momentum. And the Briggs were well and truly slammed on yesterday after that really poor performance against Luton Town. And as I said earlier on, the nervousness comes back in now, the anxiety amongst the players, the fan base, because that block, as we've mentioned, seems to be firmly in place in the players' minds when it comes to playing at Goodison Park. And unless we get that first goal, we don't seem to be able to go on and actually win a game of football in front of our own fans. And that's a huge concern. But Bournemouth, Pete, obviously, like I said, over the course of the summer, they changed the manager after Gary O'Neill did a great job for them, kept them up. And they brought in a new manager. Obviously, they signed a fair number of players as well. And I think a lot of the talk about Bournemouth, it's early days, of course, but the talk about Bournemouth was they're going to have a real solid season and potentially be sort of mid-table, no problem at all. But looking at them, looking at their squad, looking at where they are you surprised to find them in the bottom three early on in the season?
Yes, yeah. Like you say, they seem to be a team that have, for a couple of reasons, you know, massively underperformed. And but the weird thing is to look at them, and look, it's easy for me to say this is an Evertonian, but it doesn't feel like they're under anywhere near the amount of pressure that we're under. And I know Everton are a completely different club. We're a much bigger club. We're a much more established club. We've been in the top flight for far, far longer than Bournemouth. But I do think that matters. Because I think people probably look at Bournemouth and Bournemouth fans look at Bournemouth and think, you know, we're good enough to get out of this. Whereas I think now we go into the Bournemouth game and for me, yeah, I go back to last season where like the likes of Leicester, Southampton, Wolves couldn't buy a win and came to Goodison and got one. And I just, you know, we talk about stories changing the story. That, you know, I think that's in the back of my mind now, and it's going to be in the back, I think, of a lot of Evertonians' minds. And you don't want that to continue. I agree. I think Bournemouth are a very, very good side. And I know the new manager's been sort of lauded, and he's been brought in, I think, because of the success he's had at making his teams very, very difficult to beat. you know, and established and competitive. And I think we watched them play against Chelsea, didn't we? But before, was it before the Arsenal game? And they gave Chelsea a really good game. They ran Chelsea ragged at times. You could argue Chelsea were wasteful, but they're not going to come to Goodison and roll over. I think it's going to be a really difficult game. And they set up with a similar kind of 4-5-1 or 4-2-3-1 to us. Trying to be very organised and difficult to break down without the ball and hitting teams at pace on the counter. So it's a worry, and they've always been a bit of a bogey team for us, haven't they, Bournemouth? Whoever the manager's been, it doesn't matter who the manager is, it feels like. They always seem to beat us 3-2 or 4-3, or they're just, I think this is something that, psychological, that seems to play out when we play Bournemouth.
And bearing in mind also, Bournemouth haven't won a game this season in terms of the Premier League. So we know sides who are looking for the first win of the season. We know how that normally goes, don't we? But yeah, they've been a funny side, aren't they, in terms of historically with us, like you say, you know, they've come to Goodison Park and even away from home, and we've struggled to get much from them. Obviously, we got that really important win at Goodison Park last game of the season to keep us in the Premier League. But it's certainly, you know, where they are on the table. They've had a tricky start as well. You know, they faced Liverpool, Spurs and Arsenal. So no surprise to see them dropping points against them. We've had a much kinder start and find ourselves only a point further ahead of them. So, you know, we need to look at ourselves more than look at them. But are you concerned, Lee, with what happened at Goodison Park yesterday, with the momentum obviously being halted? Another home game, obviously, on the horizon against a side that maybe, you know, as I say, we thought that they might have a bit more of a more solid season, but it's early days. Could be another side who are going to be in and around the bottom three as well.
Yeah, I agree with what a lot of Pete said there. They've made a bold decision in the summer to bring in, obviously, a different coach, different style of football. Obviously, that takes a bit of time to, you know, for those ideas to get across. They are trying to play very differently to what they were under Gary O'Neill. Like you said, he did a very good job for me. He was unlucky to lose his job. Seems to be doing okay at Wolves. He had an unbelievable win yesterday against City. No one saw that coming. It's. I don't want to say like you said last week. It's they haven't had a win yet. It's got a Bournemouth win written all over it, and they are a bit of a bogey side for us. You know, the amount of times we've had Bournemouth at home on the fixture list, and all of us have just said, "Yeah, you know, chalk that down as a home win." Arguably, now we'd rather play against one of the better sides. They're going to have more of the ball. That probably suits us. Maybe they will try and come and do that, and then maybe that will suit us, and we can try and counter them. But we need to find a way to get this, you know, to win. And I don't care whether it's, you know, off someone's backside and we win 1-0. We need to be able to go into that international break before the derby with 3 points just to take that pressure off, because it's inconceivable to think right now, if we don't get anything in that game, the very likelihood is we'll be potentially bottom three, and then you're bouncing into the derby. You know what I mean? And then obviously, as we know, our derby record, let's be honest, isn't the best whatsoever. So you suddenly then, in a really emotional game, you suddenly, you know, if Liverpool are going to be favourites going into that, if you find a way to lose that as well, then Dyche is under a lot of pressure then, isn't he? You could hear it in his voice yesterday. I said post-match, that's the first time he's angry. You know, he was clearly angry. Whether he's dressed down the players afterwards, I don't know. Don't know whether that's his style. But you could see there was a lot of anger there, because he knew this was a real opportunity to release the pressure valve, and now all of a sudden it's going to be cranked right up again going into another inverted commas must win game now against Bournemouth at this stage of the season. But the players are going to have to man up, you know, they're going to have to man up and suck it up and put all that fear to one side and have a go. There's enough talent in that team now, and we've seen it in those two away games. We've seen it in flashes. There's enough talent in that team right now for me to finish mid-table in the Premier League without any major injuries to key players. there's enough talent in that team to finish, for me, in and around mid-table. And unless they change, you know, this home record, we're going to be right down there all over again, aren't we?
Exactly that. And like I said earlier on the show, the home record for Everton is so important, sustaining the Premier League. That's where you've got to pick up the majority of your points. And to be four games in at home, one goal and no points, it doesn't sort of smack of a side that are going to pick up the bulk of the points at home. And that seems inconceivable if you want to survive in the Premier League. And obviously, that rightfully so, that's a concern for us all. And with Bournemouth coming to Goodison Park, looking for a win, of course, being in the bottom three as we speak today, it's going to be a game that they're going to fancy, because whether they're in good form or not, as Luton have proven, most sides now will fancy coming to Goodison Park for a nice easy 3 points. And that's what's been created in the last sort of couple of years or so, really, is that if you want three points and you're in a little bit of poor form, go and play Everton. And we've got to change that narrative. Keep saying it. Sean Dyche likes to say about changing the story. We've got to try and change that story. And, you know, the players need to prove us wrong, because they get people back on side with two really, really solid performances against two, you know, top half sides. Aston Villa, you know, they tore Brighton apart yesterday, 6-1. Who saw that coming? You know, we know how good Brighton are. You know, Villa made 5 changes against us. We made 5 changes against them. And we were a much, much better side. So, you know, Everton is such a Jekyll and Hyde team. And you never know what Everton side are going to turn up. But I think I'd rather be going away to Bournemouth at this stage, to be honest with you. I think we'd have more of a shot at getting something from the game with how we set up and how the players seem to perform away from home as opposed to Goodison Park. But, you know, given obviously Bournemouth started the season, there's no, you know, potentially we could see them in and around the bottom three. But I think they've probably got enough to be away from that. You were saying that you think Everton have got the potential to be in and around mid-table given the side that we've got. But we do need luck with injuries, of course. We've got the majority of our players back now. The only players who are really missing are Seamus Coleman and Dele. Now, whether Dele gets any kind of opportunity to play any football, we don't know. Don't know how far away he is. But Seamus Coleman's certainly going to be the back end of October before he's back in and around the squad. And as Sean Dyche likes to say, on the grass or with the group or whatever it might be, is he going to be Dyche fit? Mm-hmm. Who knows when that's going to be? So we will see on that. But we shouldn't be going into this kind of game with trepidation and anxiety. We should be going into this game thinking we can win this game comfortably and get 3 points on the board. But this is what we've become, which is a huge concern, that's for sure. But I think that as fans, you know, we've got to go there with hope and belief that we can win the game. But they've got players, as we know, who can cause us problems, the likes of Solanke, you know, former Liverpool player. I'm sure he'll be keen to put in the performance, like a goal. Obviously, they brought like Philip Billing, I think, is a terrific player for them as well. I think he's a real talent. They brought in Justin Clive from Roma, wasn't it? Another player Everton looked at over the years as well. They have got some real talent in there, and aside that, most definitely, we can't take for granted. We can't take anyone for granted at home. That's for sure. But it's going to be a real difficult game. But do you think, Pete, just before we wrap this up, if we lose that game? So we were saying a few weeks ago that all the focus really is on Luton and Bournemouth. A lot of people almost wrote off Arsenal and Brentford games. If he loses to Luton and Bournemouth, are the serious questions going to be asked about the manager's job?
I think, unfortunately, from some section of fans, yes. However, for me, that would be unfair and premature. Because you have to look at our performances. We're playing much better. We've arguably underperformed and been unfortunate. And I think the problems at Everton are much, much bigger than Sean Dyche. And when I say that, I don't just refer to the off the field things that are playing out in terms of the, you know, the ownership and our finances. I think I'm talking about the squad and the dressing room and, you know, the psychology of the team. Yeah, we've got a lot of promising young players, but I think fundamentally we've got a squad that's just not quite good enough. I mean, you don't know how much to read into this. You were talking a moment ago about fullbacks and maybe what's lacking from that area of the team at the moment. The rumor is we're looking at two further fullbacks and another wide player. And you know, if you believe those rumors to be true, is that a bit of a statement that Sean Dyche might be slightly disappointed with some of the, not some of the business we did, but maybe the extent of our transfer activity? You know, he will have a philosophy of wanting to play a certain way, and I think you're absolutely spot on that maybe we haven't got fullbacks that are able to play in the way that either we need them to or he wants us to. So I think sacking Sean Dyche would give us more problems at this point. You know, speaking as if we lose Bournemouth, I think it would give us more problems. Apparently we might not even have the money to sack him if we needed to. I don't know how true that is, but for me it would be short-sighted. It would be short-sighted because you look at the performance yesterday against Bournemouth. We played well enough to win the game. Should have won the game. So Sean Dyche isn't the issue. It's a bigger issue than Sean Dyche.
I think, yeah, there's a lot going on around our football club right now, isn't there? Not just on the pitch, off the pitch. You know, it's not a positive noise coming out, out of the club. You know, think of the positivity around our club, guys. Just cast your mind back only a couple of years when we had Carlo flying in, James Rodriguez signing for us, his face in an Everton shirt being projected around the world, you know, Times Square, for God's sake, you know, and places like that. You know, the feel-good factor around the club then was totally different, wasn't it? You know, fast forward to where we are now, and it's everything around the club seems to be negative, everything. You know, the guys from 777 were there yesterday to watch the game. By all accounts, I applaud them in some ways, whether it goes through or not, in the fact they're engaging with fans on fan groups. You know, they're speaking, they're quite open to have dialogue. I believe they had you know, a Zoom call, whatever, with the ask yesterday. Whether you agree with that or not, that's another conversation. But apparently, you know, at least I commend them for having open dialogue, because let's be honest, we've heard nothing under the previous or the current owners, have we? We very rarely hear from them. But what I'm trying to say is there's a real cloud over Goodison Park at the minute. This is potentially our last season here. You know, is the weight of that on the players' shoulders as well? You know, you have to factor that into it. Is the weight of that, of potentially being the last season at Goodison, potentially being a relegation fight again, does that weigh on the players? You know, is that in the back of their minds? You'd hope not. But again, you know, the humans at the end of the day. But we need to change this story fast. I do disagree with you slightly there, Pete. And I think some of this is maybe a bit of a Dyche issue. Not all of it by any means, but some of it is, because he's got to find a way to be putting these sides away, particularly at home. You know, away from home, setting us up, hard to beat, counter-attack, space to run into. You know, we look far more dangerous. When teams like that who bounce into town and clearly are very limited, we've got to find different ways of winning those games. He's clearly struggled against those types of teams. We've not just proven it once, we've proven it several times. And now we've actually got a decent, I'd say, you know, a pretty decent forward line now, and even backups on the bench. There can be no excuses there now. We've got to win these games. And I do look at our style of football, and I do look at it, and I just think, you know, some people calling for Potter. Potter would be an absolute disaster for me at Everton right now. You know, I mean, you know, yes, he had Brighton playing some great stuff, but the pressure at Brighton is nowhere near the pressure at Everton. You know, if he's trying to play out from the back, Everton split centre halves, trying to do all that again, we can see the goal trying to play out from the back like that. It will be absolute murder in that ground. And as we've seen before, I don't think Potter is very, very strong mentally either. He's complained sometimes about the treatment he got from some Brighton fans when they were losing games. So for me, you know, and you're right, Pete, we haven't even got the cash flow to sack Dyche and all his team, by the way. You know, by all accounts, we're taking short-term loans to keep us afloat. We can't be paying off another manager £10 million plus and all his team. So whether we like it or not, we've made our decision with him now. We've got to stick by the manager. But he has still got to find ways of winning these football matches. He's got to find 8 goals at home, like I said before, since he's come in January. He's just not good enough. It's just not good enough at all. So he's got to find ways. And like I said, the talent's there. We've seen the talent. We've seen it in the last 2 games before yesterday. There's enough talent in that squad. He's got to find a way of winning these home games.
It's a shame that Graham Potter isn't on the shortlist if we were going to change managers, because the wizardry puns would be absolutely unbelievable. I was sitting there chuckling to myself, dead trying to get one in, but I thought, nah, it's not the time or place. We're all miserable this morning, so I'll leave it. But yeah,
do you see what I mean, Mike? Do you agree with that? He would struggle if he came into Everton right now the way it is. I think
100%.
He hasn't got the balls for it.
Well, when Marcel Brands wanted to bring him in, there was a lot of talk and concerns around the fact that they felt that Potter couldn't deal with the pressure then if he came to Everton. So obviously he's been to Chelsea since, didn't work out particularly well. But listen, I think that's another poison club, to be honest with you. He doesn't need to come into a club that is in turmoil. He needs a club that are going to allow him time, first of all, have a vision, have a plan going forward and a structure. Now, maybe Everton might be that side in a couple of years' time. We just don't know. But at the moment, certainly, I don't think that would be the right candidate. But, you know, it's all very, very premature. You know, we're not sitting here, by the way, saying sack the manager. It's just a conversation around. If we did lose the game to Bournemouth after losing to Luton, after not that, that'll be then 5 home games without a win. Questions will be asked. It's the nature of the business, unfortunately, and you know it's happened with many, many previous managers. It does get to a point where it becomes too much. But like we say, we don't know whether the money's even there to move a manager and his backroom staff on. But, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of soul searching this week, because the players have shot themselves in the foot with that performance against Luton. The manager's got to take blame as well. Of course he has, because he sets them up. So a combination of the two, a lot of soul searching this week, and hopefully they can find the remedy to actually put in a performance next weekend against Bournemouth, and hopefully win that game, so we can go into the international break with a little bit more positivity. And then we say, well, okay, we've won 3 out of 4. Doesn't look quite as bad then as winning 2 out of 4 and losing your last 2. So we've got to hope that we can put in a performance next weekend. But let's round off with our predictions if we can. Pete, are you positive about Bournemouth?
No, but I'm going to make a positive prediction. I'm going to say we're going to win 1-0.
We'll take any win, of course. Lee, what do you think?
Like I said earlier, we need to find a way to win these football matches. And this is a massive game before we break for another 2 weeks for the internationals. He's got to be drilling that into the players. I'd imagine he's massively rollicked them after that game. And rightly so, in my opinion. Sometimes you need an absolute rocket up your backside, and hopefully he's giving it them, saying, you know, how we managed to lose that game. So I'm going to say 2-1. I'm going to say 2-1 because I don't think we look like we're keeping a clean sheet at the moment either, which is also another problem.
Yeah, you took the prediction out of my mouth there. I'm going to say 2-1. Like you say, we always concede, haven't had a clean sheet all season, which is an issue. So I think we can win the game, of course. I think having, on a positive note, having Dominic Calvert-Lewin scoring 3 and 3, fantastic. You know, we haven't highlighted that as much as maybe we should, but it's difficult to after such a poor result. But it's great to see him back and scoring goals, which we know how important that's going to be for us. So he's in great form. Hopefully we can get better on the goal train as well, sooner rather than later in the Premier League. I'm sure that it will come. Of course, he's going to just need just one to go in, I think, for him, and then he'll be off and running. But fingers crossed that we can end this little period before the next international break with a win. But that's us for this week. We'll be back ourselves next weekend to look back on the Bournemouth game before the international break. Fingers crossed that Everton put in the performance at home for once, and we actually win a game of football in front of our own fans. So we will catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.